Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to the 13th episode of the Calcioland Podcast. I want to begin by thanking all those who have subscribed, left a review, sent us in questions, and, you know, just spread the word on our podcast. We really appreciate that. So the last time I talked to Alex was a week ago. At that time, Mino Raiola was walking into Casa Villa, and we didn't know what was going to happen with Donnarumma. Since then, we've also had quite a few other big events, so we have a lot to catch up to, Alex. But before we get to that, since it's been a while since I talked to you, is there any chance you're under investigation with the Spanish tax authority?
You know what? Now that you bring it up, I'm a little bit nervous. Maybe I am, but then again, you know, I guess I'll just take that problem as it comes to me. What about you, David?
Yeah, as far as I know, I'm not, but I'll tell you, the day we know our podcast has arrived is when one of us, and hopefully both of us, is under investigation with the Spanish tax authorities. Really feels that you're really a nobody until that happens. So since we're speaking of that, I know you're a big Chelsea fan. All this talk of Ronaldo potentially going back to Manchester United, in part because of this big tax scandal. Are you a little bit concerned? I know this happens every summer, but is this time making you a little bit more nervous?
All right. Well, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't, you know, at all nervous, because, I mean, we all know how potent Ronaldo is no matter where he's playing, for Portugal or Real Madrid. And boy, did he end the season with quite a bang. But honestly, David, I'm kind of daring Manchester United to make this move, because if I were a Manchester United fan, and let me just preface, I am not, I think I would be at this point really focused on the Rashfords playing, the Lingards playing, the Martials playing, a lot more. And I feel like Ronaldo coming to Manchester United, obviously, if that happens, he's going to start every game, or at least every Premier League and Champions League game. And then those young kids will not be getting their feet wet as much as they probably should be at this point. So would I be nervous for this next season? Absolutely. But in terms of the long-term outlook, I feel like it could actually mess up Manchester United a little bit. But now that I've given you my answer, David, how likely is this deal to even happen?
You see, I'm a big believer that the status quo remains until it changes if there's been a long track record. This is something I try to apply a lot when I think of transfer rumors. So we've seen that this happens almost every summer, especially when Ronaldo has a very good season. So, you know, to me, I take it as this tax situation could just be used as leverage, as the next thing that could get him on the tip of the swimming pool and him saying, I'm going to jump. And then stays for more money. I have a feeling ultimately that's what happens, that's what's going to end up happening. But at the same time, the reports on the tax situation, you know, make me believe that these reports that are more concrete and specific, I definitely think there's something to them. But I think ultimately he's going to stay put. So the other big story that happened since the last time we talked, Alex, was the Donnarumma situation. As I mentioned, as we were recording, Raiola was entering Casa Milan. We didn't know what was going to happen of it. So, of course, after we finished recording, we found out that Donnarumma, Milan's director, said he wouldn't extend his contract, and it was a final decision. Since then, there's been a lot of backlash against Donnarumma, the match in the under-21. People threw money at him. It was really quite vivid. And he seems to have second thoughts here. So I'm going to debut a new feature on our podcast, the winners and losers section, where we talk about the winners and the losers of the week. So to me, the big loser out of the situation is Raiola. He clearly lost the PR war with this. His answer on Sunday with a selected group of media was clumsy, didn't make that much sense. You know, he really didn't give a good reason why he wouldn't extend his contract. And to me, the big winners in this are Milan's directors, Fassone and Mirabelli. And a lot of people can say, how can you say that? They're potentially losing their best asset. But they really bonded with Milan fans over this situation. And that's really their core audience. These two guys came in to replace Galliani. They've been there a few months. They really improved the squad. They made Donnarumma a huge offer. Milan fans, you know, get it. These guys couldn't have done more to keep them. To me, you know, the problem with the situation is that they are on different timelines. Milan with the Europa League coming. They want to have the team ready by the summer retreat. So they wanted to know with Donnarumma if he was staying or not, if they had to find a replacement. Same thing they did with Rodriguez once De Sciglio said he wasn't going to stay. So I understand their timeline. I also understand Donnarumma's trying to see, you know, I want to make sure that Milan is going to be really good. Why can't we wait till the middle of the season? At the same time, he might also look at Real Madrid potentially signing a young goalkeeper like De Gea or your boy Courtois, and then that job not being available for years. So I can kind of understand that timeline, but it came off as such a clumsy response that to me, Raiola's the big loser. And he might even look even worse if then Milan and Donnarumma agree to an extension and he's made the scapegoat out of the whole situation. I always like to say, you know, it's the player that hires the agent, but Raiola's going to end up being the fall guy if the extension happens. So, Alex, now that we got our spiel out of the way, let's get to the great questions that we got from on Twitter. So which ones did you pick for today?
All right. Well, the first one is a player that, if you are on Twitter, he's been making headlines these last few days, really the last week, especially if you're a Chelsea or a Manchester City fan. David, why is Juventus letting Dani Alves leave for free, and what right backs are they looking at to replace him?
So this was another big story. And if you remember, you know, way back when, right after the final in Cardiff, we talked about Dani Alves being on the market despite having 1 year left on his contract at Juve. You know, I was told that he was offered to Chelsea by someone in his entourage. And Juve really was pretty open to letting him shop around to see what was out there. I think Dani Alves did really well in the Champions League for Juve, playing mainly in an offensive position. So every time I hear Juve fans panicking about Dani Alves leaving and how you're going to replace him and how it can be someone like De Sciglio, to me, what you need to replace with Dani Alves are those contributions he made in the Champions League, and those were mainly as an offensive winger. So getting Douglas Costa for Juve would soften the blow there. As far as Dani Alves, I think culturally, Brazilians historically have not done that well at Juve. I was in Turin last fall. You know, back then, Dani Alves was struggling. There were talks of him potentially going to China in January, but then he made up for it in the Champions League. I think that's where Juve is really going to miss him, though, because that's the competition where they need the most help. So it's a big blow, him leaving in that sense. I think Juve also needs to start looking at the fact of players like Vidal, Pogba, now Dani Alves being so easily willing to leave. I think that's something they need to look at as well. But I don't think they were too upset of him leaving, even because the way in the locker room, he was a little bit of a distraction. Juve is more conservative, so I think culturally it didn't really fit there. As far as why Juve is letting him go for free, well, it's important to remember that they also signed him for free. He rescinded his contract at Barcelona to go to Juve, so they got that asset for free. You know, they're letting him go for free after getting him for free, sure. He rebranded himself well, but I think if Juve wants to keep getting players like that late in their career to come like Dani Alves did, they need to show that they're willing to, you know, grant their wishes like they did with Tevez as well. So as far as the replacements, you know, remember, I think Juve needs to replace his contributions up front. But on the defense, you know, there's De Sciglio, who we've talked about in the past. There's Cancelo, very good player in Spain. That's a possibility as well. And the new one is Darmian, but it'll be interesting to see if Mourinho is going to be willing to let him go.
All right. David, any news on Napoli moving Alan to Watford? And could Watford also sign goalkeeper Neto?
So Alan, to me, it's an interesting player. Him and Jorginho are players that if I was a team looking for a midfielder, I would go to Napoli to get one of those two because they have Diarra and Zielinski and Raj coming up. So they're going to want to give them more minutes. I think Alan's a very solid player. He used to be at Udinese, so the club that's owned by the same owners at Watford. They know him. I think that's a deal that would be possible. That's really a player that I rate. I think maybe clubs like Milan or whatnot should look at him, although Napoli historically would much rather sell abroad. So I could see that as a possibility. But even if it's not Watford, I'd be really surprised if either Alan or Jorginho aren't sold this summer. As far as Neto, he's linked to Milan, looking at the situation with Donnarumma as a potential stopgap till Pizarri comes. But with the momentum of Donnarumma potentially staying, Neto might be available to teams abroad. He has interest in the Premier League and in Spain as well. I think he's a good keeper, so he'd be a good addition if Watford can get him.
Okay. Any updates on Napoli's goalie situation? Could they still sign Murray?
So the news of the week for Napoli is there seems to be, with Peperina, they look to be on their way out. Just a few weeks ago, there were some public statements between De Laurentiis and Peperina's family where it seemed that it was inevitable that they would leave. Peperina's agent asked for a three-year extension, which is his age. It was going to be a hard time getting that, especially from a club like Napoli. But recently, there seems to be a rekindling of the situation, and Peperina could stay for a year. And I think, in a way, that could help getting a young keeper like Meres, for him to be to learn from Peperina, maybe share the role up at first. So that could, in a sense, help with that. So that's the update with the goalkeeper situation at Napoli.
What about Mario Rui? Could he leave Roma for Napoli?
Oh, so yes, that's an interesting question, because Mario Rui was very good at Empoli 2 seasons ago. When he arrived at Roma, he unfortunately tore his knee while here in Boston practicing during the summer tour, and he really struggled this season. In the meantime, Emerson Palmieri was one of the revelations of the season and took his spot at left back. So Mario Rui could be of interest for Napoli. Sarri actually coached him at Empoli, although the track record of Sarri bringing his former players from Empoli has been pretty dreadful, to be honest. Mario Rui would fit a big need at Napoli if they're not able to extend a Goulam. Of course, it would have to be a good offer, because Roma would be potentially helping out a rival for a Champions League spot.
All right, let's move over to a deal that you have been all over, like white on rice. How will Roma replace Mohamed Salah, and what do you make of Roma's moves so far this summer?
So I think Salah's probably going to take the medical later today. It should be official soon. I think the player that Roma would like the most is Berardi, who played for their manager, Di Francesco, at Sassuolo. Now, granted, he's going to be very expensive. Sassuolo at the moment is asking for more than what Liverpool is going to pay for Salah. So that's not going to happen for Roma. But at the same time, Roma has a lot of young players that Sassuolo likes, and they could lower the price that way. So Berardi, I think, would be a really good addition there. I'm curious to see, though, how he would fit character-wise with the pressure in Rome. But he would certainly be their top choice as well. If they needed to raise more money for Berardi, though, the key player to watch is Manolas. And that's a really interesting player, because he's been linked in the past a lot of Premier League teams. And last summer, there was no chance Roma would sell him. There was a clause in the contract with his former Greek club would get half the proceeds. But now he could leave, especially because Roma has Rudiger, Fazio, and they signed the center back from PSV. So it wouldn't surprise me if Manolas goes. He's been linked to Zenit. Mancini there in Russia, as we know, is a great when it comes to recruiting players. But it would surprise me if Premier League clubs try to jump in, because he's a real quality back. And he might help finance Berardi and then help the team in other areas, because at center back, Roma's in pretty good shape as is.
Okay, staying on Mohamed Salah. David, how much will Mohamed Salah add to Liverpool next season?
So, you know, I know a lot of Premier League fans, you know, think of him as someone that struggled at Chelsea. And then you look at how difficult it's been for a lot of Serie A players who come to the Premier League. So there's no denying that the track record there isn't particularly good. That being said, that would be the caution. On the other hand, I have to say Salah has been absolutely sensational in Serie A. Even when he was at Fiorentina, he was absolutely devastating. Just a completely different player than the one that left Chelsea. And then at Roma, he played often as a second striker with Zeko, and they formed one of the best duos that we've seen up front in Serie A in quite some time. So I think Liverpool fans should be really excited. Fits with the other speedy players up front. So I think Liverpool is going to be a lot of fun to watch. So I'm very excited for Salah. I know he feels he has unfinished business in the Premier League, and I think he's going to be able to have a great opportunity to show how much he's improved since he was at Chelsea.
Liverpool is going to be a pacey team for sure. All right, David, can Chelsea, and yes, I smile when I say that, can Chelsea realistically sign Dani Alves, Lukaku, and a central midfielder?
So, you know, Dani Alves, ever since I got the question pretty much to Man City, seems all but done. I've been getting a lot of questions on Alexandro, and I've talked about it on the podcast a few times before. To me, the big question for Juve is, are they, if they want to sign a big name, are they going to be able to keep all their best players too? We've seen in previous summers, Vidal leaves, Dybala, Alexandro arrives. Higuain, Pjanic arrive, but Pogba leaves. I need to see Juve be able to like make a big acquisition without having to sell a player. So there's been a lot of chatter on Alexandro. And, you know, I respect everyone that reports things on this. You know, Beppe Marotta, Juve's executive director, said that he turned down a huge offer from Chelsea, but he didn't say when that was. But what's important is what Alexandro wants to do. We've seen Juve is willing to let players go if they push for a move. They did that with Vidal, Pogba, Tevez. So he would have to do that. So far, I haven't heard that that's the case. Juve has been trying to give him an extension. So let's see what happens with that. But I think Juve fans, you know, that's the question they should keep asking themselves. Is this the summer after all these revenues in the Champions League where Juve just says we're going to keep what we have and just add to it? As far as Lukaku, I think that's going to be the likeliest striker. For a long time, he's been linked to Chelsea. You know, a lot of people say they're going to make signings official after the deal with Nike becomes official. And, you know, I could see something to that. I don't know either way, but that seems somewhat plausible. So I would say Lukaku is the likeliest. I know Bakayoko has been linked to Chelsea. I'm fairly certain they'll get at least another good midfielder to increase depth and a defender in the back. So, you know, with Conte staying now, is that being the case? I think, you know, the names that we've heard in the past are even more likely. So I would say Lukaku is going to be the first one.
All right. And yeah, I can say as a Chelsea fan, the Conte thing was the number one most important thing to at least make us all breathe a little easier. All right, David.
Yeah. And, you know, and with that, you know, all I can tell you is, you know, this is something par for the course for Conte. You know, his tenacity, his intensity is the thing you like the most as a fan, but also what concerns you the most. So, you know, he's done this in the past at Juve and Bari. He quit abruptly because he was unhappy with where the transfer market and not being on the same page with the club. So it didn't surprise me that these reports were out, but, you know, it looks like everything's going to be fine and he's going to sign the extension. But, you know, for all those questioning the reports, you know, it's par for the course for him. If he stays at Chelsea long term, like, expect more of these. You know, I know as a fan, these aren't pleasant, but this is what comes with him.
Yeah, well, it does a lot for my blood pressure, I'll tell you that. All right. He was a big story last year. David, is Gabigol staying at Inter?
So Gabigol, to me, became more famous in Italy for his Instagram post than his opportunities. When he did actually play, Inter fans seemed to really gravitate to him. You know, they gave him huge ovations, but he really didn't play. Pioli, who managed the team for most of the season, basically said, look, I have other guys on the team that give me more guarantees. And he was talking about guys like Palacio, who was really washed up. It'll be interesting. I think Spalletti is probably going to want to see him in retreat. He's done really well, you know, with Salah, Perotti, El Shaarawy. You know, maybe he can get Gabigol going. The most important thing for Inter is one way or another to try to salvage his value. They invested a lot in him. So I think it makes sense for Spalletti to take a look at him in summer retreat and then decide what to do.
All right, last Twitter question. Could Milan keep Bacca and Lapadula to go with Andre Silva?
So this is a very good question. I think this is dependent on Kalinic arriving. This is a striker that Montella has wanted at Milan for a while. He's never coached them. They weren't at Fiorentina together. But when you see Kalinic play, he looks like someone that would fit well at Milan. So I'm assuming if Kalinic comes, that means for certain, especially Bacca's leaving, especially in a World Cup year. I think Milan can probably still salvage a somewhat decent transfer fee for him. So I think Bacca is the likeliest to leave, even without Kalinic. Lapadula, I think, would be an exciting player off the bench for Milan. But again, if Kalinic is there as well, it might be a little tough. I think Lapadula, though, would be an intriguing acquisition for a club like Genoa or Sampdoria. I could see him do very well there. So my favorite part of the podcast, as you guys know, is the interview, because I always try to learn something. Sometimes I'll have a friend of mine where we just catch up talking about culture and transfer rumors. And sometimes I get to talk to really exciting journalists that I don't know, personally, but that are willing to come on the podcast. And that, again, happens because you guys support what we do. So I'm thrilled to be joined by Frank Iasola. I know a lot of you guys that follow me on Twitter are also NBA fans, so you're probably familiar with him. He's on ESPN. He's a writer for the New York Daily News. If you're a Knicks fan, you know him very well because he's been covering the team for a while. So he's a great journalist. He's on TV often. He's had a long career. So I know those of you that want to learn more about journalism are going to benefit from this interview. And those of you that enjoy the NBA might enjoy it. But we also talked about soccer, as I say it for him, football for the rest of us, because he's a big fan of the sport, as I found out a few years ago. So I think you'll enjoy the interview with the excellent Frank Iasola. So I am thrilled to be joined today by Frank Iasola on the CultureLand podcast. I've been reading Frank for quite some time. I spent a lot of summers in New York. I've been reading him in the Daily News, where he's been there since 1995. Some of you that watch ESPN probably often see him on the TV show Around the Horn. He's also a radio host on SiriusXM, Monday to Friday, starting lineup. Where do you find the time to do all this, Frank? I'm really impressed.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy. But you should have said, we don't see him enough on Around the Horn. That's the introduction I need. Because the more appearances, the more money I make. And I got two kids in college, so I need the extra dollars, if you know what I mean.
Excellent. So, everyone knows you as a great basketball writer, but I know you're into soccer. And the reason, I came a little bit on your radar a few years ago is when Pirlo joined New York City FC. And I dared you to ask the hosts on WFAN, which is the biggest sports station in New York, where they notoriously hate soccer, about Pirlo, and I was shocked that you did it. So tell me a little bit how you got into soccer. I know you played in college. So tell me a little bit how often you watch soccer these days, despite all your gigs.
Well, number one, to say I played in college is overstating it just a little bit. I did walk on one year at the University of Maryland. We weren't very good. Obviously, we were bad enough that I made the team, but I've been playing basically all my life. And, I've always enjoyed the sport. I mean, to me, soccer and basketball are similar in a lot of ways. The movement, obviously, it's an international game, so that part of it, there's a connection. I also think today, if when soccer, especially was trying to make it in the United States, maybe 20, 30 years ago, people would say, well, it's not a good television sport. It's actually become the best television sport. Because
totally agree.
Football with the 9 million timeouts and replay reviews, and the NBA has gone down that road. College basketball is even worse. College football is the worst of all. It's a four-hour game, and obviously baseball, which doesn't have a clock, and there's a certain, pace to it as well. But soccer has become a much better television sport. And I love the international game, obviously the club, and then, when the national tournaments happen or international tournaments. And I even enjoy watching the MLS. In fact, in our town that I live in, the Red Bull second team, which is called Red Bull 2, which plays in the USL, they play a mile from my house. I've already been to about four of those games. But I really enjoy watching the sport.
Awesome. And I agree with you. I think it's become an amazing TV sport. And what I want to ask you is how you see the sport growing. I look at the coverage on the Premier League that we have on weekends. It's amazing. As you mentioned, It's great. It's a two-hour game, just commercials at halftime. You're in, you're out. It's a great experience. And then I look at concussions in the NFL, baseball becoming really a game that a lot of young people aren't interested at all. So I see soccer growing a lot. Do you see it going the same way?
I do, but, you know, I already think it's huge here from the standpoint that, you know, NBC has the EPL contract. So, you know, you're getting all of those games. And then, you know, Real Madrid and Barcelona seem to be on TV all the time, whether it's Champions League or whether it's on beIN Sports. So you can watch all those games as well. And then Fox has the Bundesliga, so you can see those games. So I already think it's a big deal here. You know, I think everyone talks about it growing in this country and how it could trickle down to the professional level. You know, I think the MLS is in a pretty good place. They've done the right thing by trying to grow slowly, building soccer-specific stadiums. I think if they could ever get that stadium built in D.C. and get a stadium built in Boston, I think it'll be great. You know, the smaller soccer-specific stadiums will help the sport, but it's like anything. You know, if you're Pau Gasol and you're born in Spain and you want to play basketball, yeah, right, it's a nice thing to play professionally in your home country, but the goal is really to play in the NBA, and I still think that's true of soccer. So when you're getting the best American players and the best players from all over the world, they still want to play at the highest level. And right now, the MLS isn't there. So you're going to play in England. You're going to play in Spain or Germany or Italy or France. So I don't know if we'll ever be able to compete in this country in terms of the club level with those countries. Chances are that's not going to happen. If it does, it probably won't happen in our lifetime. So, you know, you're seeing some players come over at an older age. And to the MLS's credit, it's not like they're just depending on those guys anymore. Saying, all right, we need, you know, what was the guy, the German player that came over to
Schweinsteiger.
Yeah, well, but even the back before that, the guy that played the captain of Germany who ended up playing for the Metro Stars, Donadoni, plays for the Metro Stars. You needed these guys at like 36 to grace you with their presence. That's not really happening anymore. Again, you're still getting some of those guys, but I actually like where the league is. So in terms of growing in our country, I actually think it's in a pretty good place right now.
I totally agree. And I think one of the things that's made it happen is here in America, I always like to see the best. And, you know, MLS, maybe at first they were trying to do a grassroots thing. I think the big turning point in the U.S. was having the World Cup here in 94. That was a time that a lot of people got more into soccer. And now developing it with the Premier League being on TV and the Champions League, the coverage here is sensational. Every time I go back to Europe, I complain that the coverage is so much better for soccer here in the U.S.
It really is. And I think what's going to help, too, the growth of the sport. Now you have, like, this young star in Christian Pulisic who, you know, got most of his training overseas. And for him, it's been great to be surrounded by great coaches. But he's, like, a different kind of player than what we're used to having here. You know, we've developed a lot of good goalkeepers, you know, in our day, which makes sense. You know, most kids grow up playing sports with their hands, and we've had some good defenders and things like that. But this is, like, a different kind of player, like his composure on the ball, his ability to take players on. We really haven't developed that kind of player, and that's why it's so exciting to see what he can do at such a young age. And it's, you know, I think he can help attract a lot more people. He's a good looking kid. He's got the whole thing working for him.
So I wanted to ask you, you're obviously great at coverage in the NBA, and I know you enjoy watching soccer in Europe. So, you know, in the NBA, what I find very interesting is the Golden State Warriors being such a dominating team. They're, you know, Draymond Green suspension away likely from winning the past three titles. They look well positioned to winning the next few, and it seems teams are literally punting away years waiting out the Warriors. And in Serie A, the league that we cover mainly on the podcast, we have the same somewhat with Juventus. As a journalist, how much of a challenge is it for you? Is it going to be to cover a league like the NBA where it seems like the winner is pretty much a fait accompli?
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned that, because I keep saying that, like, the Warriors and the Cavs, they've become kind of Real Madrid in Barcelona, where you know that they're always going to be at the top, but they're still then competing against other great teams from other countries. So the NBA, I think in June, it's great for the league when these two teams play, but I think during the season, and especially during the playoffs, you know, the NBA regular season, which is way too long, but there was a lot of interest because you had Houston with James Harden kind of, you know, became a big story, and obviously what Russell Westbrook was doing averaging a triple-double. So there were, you know, there's always kind of ebbs and flows to an NBA season. The Cavaliers struggled. Kevin Durant got hurt. So there was a little bit more intrigue. But once the playoffs started, you know, they went into the series. You know, Golden State hadn't lost a game yet, and the Cavs had only lost once. So it really wasn't a compelling playoff at all. And even in the finals, you know, it ended up being five games. So I don't think the NBA, I do believe that they have a bit of an issue. And I don't know if it's going to go away anytime soon, because the Warriors are still going to be great next season. Now, LeBron is only under contract for one more year in Cleveland. Yeah. So perhaps things will change next July when LeBron finally becomes a free agent.
Interesting. Yeah, because, you know, for us covering Serie A sometimes, you know, there's always interesting storylines, because unlike the NBA, there's a relegation, Champions League spots and whatnot. But, you know, with the big criticism of Serie A is Juve being a one-team league. And I kind of agree with you. The NBA has those two teams like in Spain. So the last question I have on the NBA, you cover the Knicks. I've been reading you for years. I love everything you write, making fun of Jim Dolan, who, you know, in Serie A, we have some very colorful presidents. And I think he'd be at the top of the list in Italy, which is really quite remarkable. You know, he plays in an opening band for the Eagles. He wanted to bring back Isaiah Thomas despite, you know, very bad track record of the Knicks. He's been incredibly loyal to Phil Jackson. So tell me a little bit. You must never run out of stories with him. And you think they're crazy enough to trade Porzingis? Because me as a Celtics fan, I would love that. You think that might actually happen?
Well, there's obviously talk about it now potentially happen. I don't think it will. But it's funny about the Knicks. They have such a huge following. And as you know, there's transplanted New Yorkers all over the country. So whenever they're on the road, especially in places like L.A. or Atlanta or down in Florida, you know, you see a ton of Knicks fans everywhere. So even when they're bad, even when they're dysfunctional, and they've been that for most of the last 17 years, there's still a very interesting story. And you know, every year you have these great teams and everyone's following the Warriors and the Cavs, but the Knicks are kind of like this drama onto themselves, and they always seem to generate a ton of interest, even when they're bad. And guess what? They still sell out every game. So their dysfunction, the poor results don't impact attendance. And it's become a place where if you have a lot of tourists in town, especially a lot of people from Europe, they want to go to Madison Square Garden. So late in the year, if the Knicks are playing just a run-of-the-mill opponent at the, you know, in March in the NBA regular season, they're still getting fans to go there because people want to go to the Garden. They want to see what it's like. They want to see what celebrities show up and say that they went to the world's most famous arena. So the fans never stop coming, and the dysfunction never seems to stop as well.
So, you know, what I find about Dolan that's interesting is he's also a very loyal guy. Like, Phil Jackson has been really awful running the Knicks. Every move he's made has gone badly, except for drafted Porzingis. So do you think me as a Celtics fan, should I have any hope that he's crazy enough to send him here or to any other team for that matter? I know you interviewed his brother, I think, just recently, right?
Yeah, but here's the thing, though, about Jim Dolan. I think he's more of a contrarian. So he wants to do the opposite of whatever the media is kind of demanding that he does. So here he is showing this, you know, unbelievable patience Phil Jackson, and there's something to be said for that. Everybody wants to have a boss who kind of lets you do what you want to do. But, I mean, at some point, don't you have to step in and say, hey, what's the deal here? I've paid you a fortune over the last 3.5 years, and all you've done is gone 80 and 166. That's not good enough. So, and now Phil Jackson, yes, he's spoken to a bunch of teams, and Chris Porzingis maybe could be on the move. Like you said, I did speak to his brother Giannis yesterday in Latvia, and they're kind of, you know, I think they know after 2 years in New York that anything is possible. So they're not too shocked by it. They're obviously upset by it, that's for sure.
So I want to close with this, Frank, and I really appreciate your time. A lot of my listeners are aspiring journalists. Some of them are great columnists that they would love to do what you do, having a radio show and being on ESPN. But, you know, I would imagine your career has changed a lot. Like I mentioned, you started as a beat reporter and been at the Daily News in 95 when newspapers were still so big. Tell me a little bit of how the industry has changed and how you've had to adapt to all the changes.
Yeah, you know, it's changed tremendously. You know, newspapers were king, you know, when I first started. And it was good because you started from the ground floor, and now anybody can have a blog or radio show, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I do think for some people, you know, maybe not kind of having the growing pains of learning what it's like to be on a beat, learning how to really write a story. I think in the long run, that's actually going to hurt them. So I think there's a lot more quantity out there. I'm not sure if there's much quality anymore. And that's not to say that people aren't trying to do a good job. But I do think, you know, when you start out and you're covering high school sports and then you move on to college, it's just a little bit different. You know, you learn how to develop sources. You learn how to write a story, as opposed to me just starting a Nick blog today, reading what other people write and now like expressing my opinion. Yeah, there's something to be said for that, opinion pieces and things of that nature. But, you know, anybody can do that. And do you really have any type of insight? Are you really around the subjects every day? So, you know, I still feel there's something to be said for having your name in a newspaper. I certainly, it means a lot to me, and your credibility means a lot. That's why I crack up too. And I think this has been the problem with Twitter and with, you know, everyone having a blog. Every time we write something, people think, wow, that must have been made up. We would get fired for making stuff up. And I think it's only gotten worse. You know, forget about what your political leanings might be, but I think when the president, every time there's a story that doesn't paint him in a good light, he just describes it as fake. And you've seen a lot of professional athletes take that approach as well. Well, that's fake. It's fake news. That's fake media. They're just making it up. I mean, come on. You know, it's the 99% of the newspaper reporters that I know, they're not going down that road. Because if you do that once, you're going to get fired, and it wouldn't be worth it for one story.
Yeah, I think you made some excellent points. I think, you know, what's really important for people is to distinguish, you know, being a reporter, being a pundit, an analyst. You've done both. And, you know, it's also very important for people to know that. And I think the quality of the information going, instead of someone who's there, like you mentioned, to someone that's just, you know, tweeting information, has a watered thin down. So the last question I want to ask you is, what advice would you give yourself when you were starting, or maybe what advice would you give to someone now that's looking to get in the field, seeing the big changes in the landscape?
Take finance classes. No, I'm only kidding. What I would do, I would tell people, you know, just keep plugging away. There's actually more opportunity for you now than before, you know, so you got to write. If you want to be a writer, you got to get clips. And the best way to get on TV is probably to write. So even if like your goal later on down the road is to be radio, it's to be on TV, learning how to write a story and developing a story, that, you know, that's always going to be a value to you. And I think if you look, even at ESPN, if you look at some of the on-air people there, whether it's Stephen A. Smith, Michael Smith, Jemele Hill, Buster Olney, Tim Kirkchin, Adam Schefter, every single one of them started in the newspapers. You know, they started by being reporters first. And I think, you know, then they became experts in their whatever particular field they may have. Adrian Wojnarowski, I just ran into him 20 minutes ago. He was the same way. Started out in newspapers. So I think, you know, even if you're not going to get a newspaper job, I always think it helps to kind of be a writer. And if you're going to write, you got to, you know, you got to write as much as you can. If you're looking to get a job somewhere, the best way to do it is you need clips, or you need samples, I guess you would say today, because if it's on the internet. So that would be the best thing to do. Just keep plugging away. Never think that you're calling somebody too many times, and, you know, and hopefully you get a little bit lucky. That'll help too.
Listen, Frank, I can't thank you enough for doing this. It was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed it too. It's really great info. So thanks again.
I appreciate it, and good luck to you guys.
So that was another great episode. Again, I want to thank everyone that's supporting what we do. I'm very excited with the progress of the podcast, and that only happens thanks to your support. Going to have another episode tomorrow where we're going to have a return guest that I think you guys are going to be excited to hear from again. So again, thanks for listening. Please share, leave a review, and we appreciate you sending in questions with the Couch of Land podcast. Thank you so much for listening.